I'm the host of the Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time, and we are really happy to be with you. We've got a terrific segment coming up with Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio, certainly no stranger to this show, but it seems like every time he comes on, he's got novel revelations, and this is going to be one of those times. Before we get started with Paul, I just want to remind everybody that you need food and water, and that's who also makes this show possible. We've got the very best storable food company in the world. We call it preparewithdave.com because that's the website you go to, but it's 25-year shelf life, no glyphosates, no GMOs, 70% off the price. We've got 2 and 4 week packets that you can stack up on. You know you need to get to 6 months, but we also know for a lot of you it's a building process because it's a little daunting and expense to get there. But with that 70% off figure, you're really going to do well. You'll get there quickly. Preparewithdave.com is the place to go, and they make this show in part possible. Also, if you need food, you need water. And you remember Aaron Brockovich, the 218 million homes that have chromium-6 that cause cancer? Oh, yeah, that's right, pharmaceuticals, all the stuff that seeps into your water that we can't filter out, all the other nonsense going on. Well, the Alexa Pure Pro filter is absolutely doing a fantastic job, and it's really the best filter that's out there. It's on sale right now. This is a great time to jump on this. Go to waterwithdave.com. So those are the people that are making this segment possible with Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio. Paul, I want to welcome you to the show once again. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us in this post-election special.
Well, listen, Dave, it's always a pleasure to be with you and your audience in representing Agenda 21 Radio and, of course, New California State. I'm doing both entities now. It's just simultaneous coming out.
I know how busy you are. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a wonderful day, post-election day, and it's a beautiful day out here on the left coast. Can still continuing to be firmly ensconced in the left coast, as it seems. But I'm very happy to be here.
Well, the election's coming on. The Republicans increased their hold on the Senate, and the Democrats, as predicted, actually wrestled control of the House away. But, you know, there's something that when I read the body language of Donald Trump today, he's not the least bit worried about having lost the House. I saw nothing there that indicate he thinks this is going to be a problem. What do you think about that, Paul?
Well, I agree. I think that this was actually, when you take a look at it on balance and after you go through all the emotions, and I got to tell you that, I was just as emotional about a lot of things as anybody else and seeing the House kind of dwindle away. But the reality check is, the history is, certainly in the favor of the Democrats, and history took over because, after so many years, there's always this flip-flop of the incumbent with the House, and I think it's been 80 years or so, but it wasn't as bad this time. I think in terms of least injurious of all of them over the last 80 years is actually Donald Trump in terms of those numbers. So I think they got away with about 26. They needed 23. I think there's still some races even still in doubt, and people are checking on those numbers. So you might, that's going to be really less than normally. It was 48. I think one time Obama had 55 in his year. So yes. The actual turnover there, the House, is not as bad as people think. But the big win, of course, is the Senate. And he's in complete control of the Senate, in my opinion. That number is probably going to be 55 at the end of the – when everything gets counted and straightened out. I haven't heard what's going on with McSally. I know she was leading the last time I heard, but that
– Oh, I've got an update on that, my friend, and it is not good news. The Taliban cinema, as I call her, because she encouraged people to go fight with the Taliban when she was running for state legislative office. Of course, they're chalking it up to youthful indiscretion. By the way, Paul, I'm going to toot my horn here for a minute if you don't mind. Ernie Hancock of Freedom's Phoenix is a good friend of mine. And I was talking to Ernie about cinema, and I said, Ernie, I heard somewhere she encouraged people to go fight with the Taliban. She goes, Dave, that was on my show. I said, really? Ernie, can I get that tape? And he got that tape, sent it to me. He also published it up on Freedom's Phoenix. And I sent it out to some of the people on the staff of my congressman, Paul Gozar, has been on my show quite a bit. And it made its way to cinema. And before you know it, it was made into an ad. So I'm going to toot my horn here that I was one of the catalysts, along with Ernie Hancock, of exposing cinema for being a traitor to this country. But let me tell you what's going on with the election. Right now, 15,000 votes separate the two candidates, with McSally slightly in the lead. They have about a half a million votes to count. Now, here's the thing that I'm highly, highly suspicious of, Paul. They've got a situation where they're taking their sweet ass time about this, and I'm really, really upset. Yeah, they should be working 24/7 over the weekend, and they're not. They're working banker hours, and they're going to come back on Monday after Friday, and they say it's going to take 8 to 9 days. And let me tell you what else I found out. A Democrat is in charge of the process, and they're opening the door for massive voter fraud.
Right, and that's what's going to happen. That's what happened up there with if you remember, I think it was Minnesota, with you know, the guy with the glasses who took that Senate seat, the comedian. I can't remember his name right now. See, I don't want to remember these people's names. But you may, that's what they did to him. And that was a 2014, I think, or 2012.
Was that Al Franken?
Al Franken, right. That's what Al Franken won. Same thing. Same scam. It's a scam. It's all a scam.
It is a scam.
Right.
And I can't believe McSally's people aren't out in the media calling out the Maricopa County registrars for not getting out there and doing this 24/7. I've started calling out. Now, it's interesting. One of the local radio stations here, and I was driving home today, I had it on, and the host was really going off. He was sounding like me. He said, this is wrong. He said, this stuff should be done in a day or two.
Right.
It is inexcusable for this to go on for 8 or 9 days.
It's absolutely, this is when you see this going on, it's massive voter fraud. It's easily caught right now. Yet your law enforcement, your sheriff, everybody should be actively involved in this to try and get these people to sit in and count. And it should be observed. There should be observers in there, like, right away doing all this, watching all this. There should be. They should bring in federal marshals is what they should do.
Well, they should be guarding everything right now. And here's what they're telling the public. Oh, it's okay. We got everything on video surveillance. Like, that can't be doctored. That can't be dubbed.
Right. And it is. We've heard that. Listen, we've heard it all out here in California, too, many times. Many, many times. This is the fix is in business.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, there's something else that happened here, too. And then I want to get down to your reactions as to some of these events that have taken place. But we have a station here in Phoenix, and I know you've heard of it. It's KTAR FM 92.3. Right. KTAR is the biggest news talk station in Arizona. It's huge. And they've always been known for being conservative, citizen-friendly, community-oriented. And I have noticed a big change in these people. They have totally gone to the dark side and to the left. And they think this 8 or 9 days is perfectly appropriate. And man, oh man. And let me tell you what they did. I called them out on a podcast. They came out the day before the election on November 5th. And they said, oh, the early ballots are favoring Kyrsten Sinema. And I go, whoa, wait a minute. We passed a law on this about 35 years ago that said early polling and the announcement of results could not be made before a certain time because it would discourage people from voting because they thought the election would be over. We have federal laws on this, and KTAR broke the law. Now, the excuse, when I called them and I talked to them, and they only would talk to me off the record, they said, oh, it was just one of our guests that said it. And I said, you had a duty to censor that, and you had a duty to rebuke it under federal law.
Well,
so, a lot of crap going on, Paul.
Talk 24 hours, I think, on just the voter frauds that's going on right now, because it's all over the nation. And probably a staggering proportion that we just don't even – most people just cannot even comprehend it, you know.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, let's get down to brass tacks now. We got the election results in. We got Trump and Acosta going at it, and Acosta's credentials now have been suspended. He can't attend the briefings. You've got the resignation of Jeff Sessions, but amazingly, Rosenstein's still in place. I mean, where would you like to start with this whole menu of events?
Gosh, there is just so much on the plate right there. A lot of things happening, of course, and it's now after the election. I'll go with Sessions first to begin with so we kind of understand. Sessions is...
Paul, you just went a little bit faint on me.
How's
there.
That? Is that
we
better?
Had great volume up until that point.
And is that better?
That's better. Thank you.
Anyway, we had... with the Sessions situation... I for disclosure, our Chris Street, who works on Agenda 21 Radio with us, actually advises Jeff Sessions and has been advising him for a number of years on a number of different issues. So I have a little bit more knowledge about what's going on about his case and that sort of thing. So, but Jeff Sessions left when it was time for him to leave, and I think the audience needs to understand that it's not a firing per se. It might look like a firing. That's fine. But the bottom line was Jeff Sessions' job is done. And as I was told specifically by advisors, not just Chris, no, and actually Chris hasn't said anything, I shouldn't include him, but other people that I've talked to very close to the situation said he, you know, his job was going to do a certain thing and he's done it. He's done. And at some point in time, probably around the election, when the election is over, he will step down. And that was months ago I heard this. And again, that was because the cries of people that not understanding what Jeff Sessions was doing, and they wanted to hang him. You know, and there's Trey Gowdy and these guys. I think that's just all part of the scene that they want to try and protect Jeff. But he's done a lot of really, really good work. And what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of stuff coming forward now that is because of his work behind the scenes. I think he recused himself for a reason, and I think we're going to find out more and more about that reason. But it's time for him to move on, and of course, who's going to replace him is the big deal. The big deal is it now, I think it's, is it Whitaker, is that his name?
Yeah, Whitaker. The interim, yes.
Right, he's the interim. Now, he's in complete control of the investigation and everything. He is leaning Trump. He doesn't have to go through the hearing process or anything like that, so he does have a bias towards Trump, and he can scrutinize Rosenstein, and he can also scrutinize Mueller in those investigations. And oh boy, you betcha he's going to do that and do it right away, post haste. And there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to start emanating from Mueller and everybody else. We're going to start to see the ties and connections with Mueller and the whole thing, you know, with all the different countries that he was involved with the CIA and stuff. Nobody even wants to know about that. You know, this whole thing with Mueller is just going to start to really blow up and expand. And I think this whole Russia thing, they're going to really want to get away from that real quick. And I think Nancy Pelosi, having seized the speakership for the House from everybody else, because she's not elected to speaker, but everybody's referring to her as the Madam Speaker now. If you notice, she hasn't been elected. And of course, a lot of the Democrats are going, wait a minute, we didn't elect her. Well, she just seized power from you guys. Just remember that. She's the one who took the initiative, stepped up to the cameras and started speaking to the president on her own. Nobody else did. So that I think they've sort of given that position to her by their inaction and not being savvy enough to take it from her. But, you know, she's going to come around. I think that Trump has a lot of things. You know, Trump now has the keys to the treasure chest of knowledge, and he knows what is going on behind the scenes with all these people. And I have a feeling that the House, under the leadership of Pelosi, is going to behave quite well. You're not going to see this impeachment business. I think the whole story about all these investigations coming around is going to diminish and go away because Trump has things on everybody, including Adam Schiff, Maxine Waters. I mean, Maxine Waters has a life of corruption so long, and now all that stuff is open for inspection by Donald Trump. So I have a feeling these people are going to be in trouble. The big win is the Senate in all this. The big win is the Senate. And, you know, pulling in as many as – he'll be up to 55 senators at the end of the day when everything is counted. That is just a massive win. So everything that he needs to have done, especially with the judges
– Whoa. Paul, are you with me?
I'm with you. Is that can you hear me all right? Boy.
Yeah, you're a little faint here. Let's try to bring that volume up again.
How about that now?
Okay, that's good. I agree with you about the judges. He's got control of the nominations, the approval process. I don't think that's going to change. Paul, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I got you fine.
I was interviewing Joe Hagman earlier today, and we had some very bizarre occurrences where we couldn't even call each other, which you know I had happened too with a mutual contact of ours. Anyway, let me tell you what I was told today, and I was told this an hour before it was announced in the media that Jeff Sessions was out, and I got a phone call from an old reliable source, and he said, Sessions is gone, and I said, predictable, midterm's over, and I said, what does it mean? Is there going to be indictments? That was my first question, and the answer surprised me, said, no, but there will be the threat of indictments.
Right.
And they said that information has been gathered and that Trump will be holding closed door meetings with the Pelosi's and the Schumer's and saying, this is what I got. And we could deliver indictments, but it'll spill over to you. And if you don't want to go to prison, you better play ball with me. And this is why I think we saw a Donald Trump today that was relaxed, jovial, yep, and confident. And he could have cared less that the House was taken over by the Democrats, because he controls the key Democrats because of leverage. What do you think about that?
That is absolutely correct. And here's the other part of that. The other caveat is that this is now time for him to expunge those in the House. Now, you got to remember that he is much stronger because everybody that's come into the Senate is loyal to him. You know, he's got a real loyalty thing going on with a lot of those senators now. They are emboldened and feel that he is the president that they need to be working with. So the other downside of that is you even today have members of the House of Representatives that are still not on board with him as the Republicans. And a couple of them happen to be in California, I might add, which is a very interesting. We don't have that many California Republicans in the House, of course, because there's 53 seats, and I think we had 14 to begin with, and now we're down to like 11. We lost three in California, as I recall. I was predicting had there been a clean election in California, we would have been up to 30 Republicans, but that wasn't a case. The whole election out here was completely, you know, fixed. That's another thing we'll probably talk about. But his loyalty value and really the real Republican president has now stepped up. And that's why you see him feeling so comfortable. He's got control. And he's got control over the House. These people think that they've got something on him. Guess what? He's got all the goods. And he'll deliver. You know he's going to deliver something.
Well, he said that today.
Yeah.
He said, you know, you don't want to throw things at me here now that you got control of the House, because I got a lot on you and it's going to get ugly.
Right. And especially now with the move of Sessions away. See, this is the whole calculus behind it. They knew that they were, you know, they were going to lose the House. That I think they were really kind of concerned that something might go awry in California, like maybe a normal election, and they might gain seats, which would give them the House back. But he'd still be struggling with these House rhinos, if you will, especially some from California, that would really be screwing things up. And this is going to give him an opportunity when the cleansing for California starts to happen to get rid of these guys. And that's going to start happening. I guarantee there's a couple of sticks in the mud that are really screwing things up for him. But they're going to be taken care of. He is in control now. He is really in control.
Let me give you a fact check of part two of what I was told. I said, okay, so tell me about the leverage. And so here's the answer I got. Did you think it was odd that Rosenstein is called to the White House? Everyone thinks he's fired. And then he goes back 3 days later and he's getting an endorsement from Trump.
Right.
And I said, yeah. And the person I'm speaking to says, Dave, you've written about why this is true. And I said, do you mean his wife, Barsoomian? And he said, exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Barsoomian is the cleaner for the deep state. She's the fixer.
Right.
It's like the law firm, you know, the movie The Firm with Tom Cruise,
it's
a criminal organization defending criminals. Well, that's Barsoomian. And she's defended Hillary Clinton 45 times and a whole bunch of other deep state people. And I was told, look, when Rosenstein got called in, he was told, I got this on you, I got this on you, and I got this on your wife. Do you both want to go to prison, or do you want to play ball?
Well, you know, where that all took place was that airplane trip they took.
Exactly. Exactly right. Are you buying the fact that Barsoomian will be involved with Rosenstein in a leverage flip?
Absolutely. How can you leave it out? You know, this is part and parcel of the deal, you know, that they're all so interconnected. When you take one, you got to take the other ones with you, or you got to find some way to fish and cut bait away from it. You know, McCabe is an example. What are you going to do with McCabe's wife, who got, you know, $700,000 from Terry McAuliffe for his campaign contribution? And of course, who lined that up was McCabe himself, helping his wife out in Virginia against Dick Black. I mean, those are the kind of things you have to kind of suss through. And if you're going to take one, take the both of them, you know.
That's almost laughable.
I know. It's just, it's so out there and it's so documentable But, you know, we're playing this game now where I got something on you. And I think they're going to really take the Democrats to task from the standpoint. They're just going to be apoplectic. They'll be frozen. They really won't be able to do what they want to do. And he's going to have them saying, you're going to pass what I want you to pass. It's a wonderful thing to see.
Well, you know what this reminds me of is when the health care bill passed under Obama and the bill was going down to defeat, but there were Republicans they had to flip, and then they flipped the ones that were compromised.
Of course.
That's why they're compromised. And that's what we're seeing here again. I mean, what the Democrats did to the Republicans in 2010 with the health care bill, we're seeing it happen again now under Trump. And I think Trump is going to have his way legislatively.
Well, you know, the thing is with Pelosi is there's a lot to compromise with her.
Where do you want to start? Give us a couple things.
I mean, you can start talking with the water wars out here in California. You can talk anywhere you want. She's just got so many tentacles with so much, politically with every one of these characters. She knows where absolutely all the skeletons are buried in Washington. And she knows everything about the Clintons. She knows everything about Obama. So, I mean, she could just sing and sing and sing, and she knows it. That's why her whole demeanor is completely changed. She's actually acting like a lucid woman. Have you noticed?
You know, you stole the words right out of my mouth, my friend.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone earlier this evening, and I said, for the first time since I've ever heard Nancy Pelosi speak, she actually made sense today.
Well, let me tell you a little secret. Let me tell you a little story. I don't know if I've told your audience, but I was talking to my audience about it today. Back in 2012, I attended a California state, listen to this, Democratic convention in Sacramento. And she was the keynote speaker. And I sat at a table right next to her. She sat just a few feet away from me. She had her nice little lime green pantsuit on. And then at another table, just kind of catty-corner to me, within literally two steps away, was Gavin Newsom and his wife. And so I was kind of sitting in a prime little spot there. But anyway, we're eating dinner, and all of a sudden it's her time to get up there and speak. Now, remember, everybody has this opinion about her that she's just crazier than a loon, her eyes are all bugged out and all this other good stuff. And she gets up and just takes command and just delivers an absolutely brilliant speech. It was brilliant. Listen, me saying it's brilliant and coming out of Nancy Pelosi, what an oxymoron. You know what I'm
exactly,
saying? I was like,
yeah.
What? So it was just, and today was a reminder of that, you know, she was serious. She was straightforward. She was, ingratiating, and she was welcoming. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is what I saw that night. Not that lunatic, crazy woman out there, a businesswoman trying to do the right thing, doing and saying all the right things. And I'm sitting there thinking, and I said to myself, Donald's got something on her. And that's exactly what it is. So I think we're going to see some better behavior. But keep in mind, she's still, as far as I'm concerned, a wild criminal. but this is the turn it on, turn it off, Nancy.
Interesting. Let me ask you this, though. Where do you think the point of entry into the leverage will be? Do you think it's Uma Abedin and Anthony Weiner with the tapes? Is it Deborah Wasserman Schultz? What do you think it is?
Well, I think it's what is going to happen is you've got a lot of things still in play out here in California. I think California is going to be the big peach and all this stuff. And you got Gavin Newsom. Of course, Gavin Newsom is a complete leftist loon. He's another, Gavin Newsom is not a brilliant man. He's got a beautiful family and a wonderful family from what I understand, but he is not, he's not as smart as everybody thinks it goes along with looks at all. So he's a stage plant, he's planted, and he's going to be listening to people. He says he's going to be further left than Jerry Brown, and he's going to be taking on the Trump administration, yada, yada, yada. But there's a lot of problems out here in California, and I think that there's a lot of triggering devices. There's a lot of things being uncovered about Nancy Pelosi and some other people, Republicans actually, that are being involved with a lot of the things right now. And that's all on Trump's desk. He knows that. And thank goodness to the water wars, the fire wars, the disaster capitalism, they have to do some major repairing out here in California to keep this union together. And, of course, immigration and illegal foreign nationals running around out here like crazy is all a big part of that. He doesn't want to lose this part of the neck of the woods, and he could lose it, but I think he's got an ulterior plan, and that ulterior plan, I think, is New California.
How is he going to use that?
Well, we are the answer to the problems in California fiscally, and California is about to go off the deep end fiscally. They've run out of, you know, like I say, the deck chairs on the Titanic being squirreled around to make bills every month or pay bills every month. They've run on out of that capability, and of course, with Silicon Valley going toes up and everything, those tax receipts are just not going to come in. So, we think in about 6 to 8 months, maybe 10 months, California will be on the verge of real insolvency, so they can't pay their bills. And that deep recession for California and Silicon Valley is just—it's exploding. I mean, businesses are leaving Silicon Valley like crazy because of the high taxes and all the things that drive other people out. It's driving them out, but they've got a business model that is antiquated now. Actually, the FANG stocks, which is Facebook and Apple and Amazon and Netflix and Google, their business model and the way that they do business, in the sense, especially storage capabilities, is now switching to blockchain, and they're not ready for the blockchain revolution, and that's what's driving them down. Everybody knows their business model is a failure. And so they're not going to be making the kind of money that they have been making to contribute to California's, budget. And as a result, they're not going to make their budget numbers. We know that. Last year, California, because they were shifting money around and stealing from one account to another, they spent $26 billion on illegal foreign nationals. You know, that's where they gave them driver's license and all this other stuff, plus, you know, all the things that go along with it, bringing them into communities and feeding them and clothing them and all. That was all part of the racket. And that money was used we don't have $26 billion. You know, they had to borrow it, and that's part of the problem. The budget every year to pay for the business of government in California is around $24 billion. And in a few months, less than a year, they're not going to be able to come up with that kind of money to pay the bills.
What's going to happen then?
They'll go to insolvency, and what will happen is that there will probably be a time when they can't pay their bills, and that's when the federal government will take over and dissolve the government and actually consider them an insurrection, and Donald Trump could possibly step in and form a new government, and that's New California.
Is that what you're hearing, or is that what you think is going to happen?
That's what states do. That's what happens when states can no longer pay their bills. And California can't go bankrupt, so they're going to have to become dependent upon the federal government to pay their way out. And of course, does Arizona want to pay the debt of California? I don't think so. Or nor does Maine or whatever. And that's how it would be spread out to everybody. And the president is not going to let that happen. He's going to protect the other 49 states because he knows there's a financial way out of California's plight. And the only way to do it is to restructure it through New California as a new state and come up with a constitution that is not like California's. And California's constitution, this is one of the biggest problems that it has. It has an 11-month legislative cycle. So the legislature meets for 11 months a year, every year. And, I mean, what could possibly go wrong when you have a legislature that's meeting 11 months every year, passing laws and the governor signs it? They can literally introduce a law on Monday, have it go through committees by Monday and Tuesday, and Tuesday afternoon the governor signs the law. Just a standard business. That's just outrageous. So, you know, the more laws, the more taxes, the more regulations. And now California is overburdened with the regulations. I mean, we're number 50th in just about everything, business, climate. You talk about education. I mean, we're just down there, and we're not going to crawl out of anything unless we have money. And again, it's the state that's been stealing the money for their own devices. You know, here in California, as an example, the public schools, I bring this up all the time because I was in schools for years. But the state is supposed to give, you know, school districts the money that they're owed for attendance reasons. And that's how school districts stay afloat. So, you know, if I'm a school district and I've submitted a voucher in for the payment of the money that the state's supposed to give me for attendance of, say, $10 million, what the state does when they pay it, they only pay you $5 million. And they say, oh, we're going to defer $5 million later. And you go, wait a minute, but they never pay it. They keep the money and use it for their own programs. That's what goes on here. And so you have school districts out here in California that are dying for money. They're being cash, you know, they're cash starved, and they can't pay the bills yet. What do? They get rid of more teachers, get rid of more adults around kids, and of course it creates a chaotic educational environment. This is what goes on in California, so that they can pay these bills for illegal social, the illegal foreign aliens coming into the country. That's what they're doing. I mean, this is just over the top bad, evil, but this is why California is in the boat that it's in, because the state government steals the money.
Well, isn't the malintent of Jerry Brown manifested through Barack Obama's former cabinet officials like Eric Holder and the cartels and the Bank of China and the Mexican consulate? And the idea is to get California out of the union under the UN protectorate,
right,
so it'll help collapse agricultural prices in this country as well as retail industry.
Well, that's exactly what they're trying to do with these caravans right now, and bringing all these people. We call it the trafficking in human flesh and slavery. That's exactly what they're trying to do right now, is overwhelm the system here and bring in all these illegal foreign nationals. And the cartels get billions of dollars out of this, because when all these people come across the border, they're paying the cartels, you know, $8,000 to $10,000 per person. By the way, and I want to say it was William Longines who finally broke that story a week and a half ago about the coyotes, and he's using my words right out on a show. I mean, talking about anywhere from $5,000 to $6,000 to $10,000 per person. And he actually interviewed some people that had to pay that. And then he started talking about the market value was going up because the coyotes had more to contend with when they got to McAllen, because they're putting up barbed wire. I mean, went into a great description of it with the people that were being, you know, the cartels were being paid to bring across the border right there. So finally, we're getting this discussion out there. It's all about the billions of dollars that is raised to, you know, it's an industry. It's a major league industry now in the United States, this trafficking in human flesh and slavery. So yeah, it's all part of the cartels. It's all part of you gotta throw the church organizations in there, because they're getting paid big dollars by the federal government, the Catholic charities, and from the Mormons and the Lutherans and the Methodists. They all have their charitable organizations at the border, and they're getting paid billions of dollars to shelter and to feed and clothe these people.
That's really it's cultural Marxism, as well as an economic takedown of this country. But do you think the midterms are having any effects on this? I don't know that they are. If they are, tell us how.
I don't see them having any effect on it, and I don't see anything except that the actions of the federal government, they're going to have to be prompted at some point in time to step in to take this over. The other part of it, as you know, and we've been reporting this, and you've done a really good job on this, we've been reporting for years what's been going on south of the border, these trained individuals and the training camps, and of course all these people from MS-13 coming across. And you know, this has been a disaster for our country. It's a demographic shift that's not good and not healthy. You have military aged men, these caravans, and again, I want to say Griff Jenkins and William Longines from Fox News, actually, we're reporting this stuff, the stuff that you and I have been talking about, bringing the kids out, and the kids and the parent and the mothers get in front of all these men in the caravan, and you got 85% of the caravan of these men that are 35 and younger, all military-age men.
Exactly.
So, you know, that stuff is now out there, in the main, at least in Fox News.
Well, and social media is being hypersensitive, and let me explain what I mean by that. Last night at 9 o'clock Pacific, I came on, I did a live presentation on YouTube, and I did about an 8-minute recount of the election. But I said, folks, don't focus on losing the House. Focus on the people that are coming here that aren't the men and women who want to wait on your tables and take care of your yard. And no, they're not coming in the right way, but they're not a threat. And they eventually adjust and they add to our culture in the long term. I said, I'm not talking about these people. I'm talking about the people who are trained in El Salvador, and it's put together by a marriage of the Sanchez Paredes drug cartel,
right,
which is the Peruvian army. And they bring together Middle Eastern terrorists with the drug cartels in Central America. and they've trained them to become a Red Dawn invasion force. And I said, I've had this information for 5 years, and I have put it out multiple times. Within 30 seconds of publication, YouTube demonetized it.
Right, right. I believe that. We've been having some of our comments from some of the stuff I put up, this story about what happened out here in election fraud in California. It went out on Facebook. It's just what, you know, when we publish it, these things go out to the store, to Facebook. And Paul,
I'm losing you a little bit again.
Is that okay? Is that better? Anyway,
yes. Yes.
What happened was, is that they took it down off of Facebook. Within about 3 or 4 minutes, they obviously got the algorithm for the statement I made. And I think they got it from when we were typing the program in. That's what I think.
Holy crap. That was pretty
fast. Fast,
quick.
Right. Real fast.
Yeah, but it's kind of like a badge of courage, because see, I'm going to come out tomorrow and I'm going to put that video out on my website, and I'm going to say within 30 seconds of publication, they demonetized that. What they basically have said, hey, this is true and we're trying to cover it up.
Right. That's exactly what, and they're working together on this. You know, they know that, especially Facebook, it seems YouTube's a little bit better from what I've been gathering, but Facebook is taking these things down immediately. I really think that they were following, as I was in, you know, some of the stuff, they were following my keystrokes that happened so quick. That's what I think.
Well, I think they were watching me live to see how far I'd go. And like I said, as soon as we hit publish, boom, demonetized. I thought, man, that's incredible. And then there was another video I did. This is kind of interesting too. It was, I called it, two of the three accusers have admitted to lying about their encounters with Kavanaugh. Okay, I'm sorry, that's mainstream media news. It's not even debatable. It's not controversial.
Right.
It's a fact. It's reported everywhere. Okay? And they demonetized it before publication.
Yeah. Well, they're a little worried.
I think they're more than worried. So let's do two prognostications here, okay, parallel paths. One question would be, how far can Trump take this recovery and the recovery of nationalism and the government serving Americans first versus the threat of impeachment or assassination? Let's contrast these two possibilities.
I think the threat of assassination is a very real one, and he lives with it all the time. I really believe that. And of course, the evidence was, you mentioned the Peruvian army. They're the Maoist out there. They're the most ruthless Shining Path organizations. They're the heavy trainers. They work with Iran and Hezbollah and all these other guys up there in northern South America, especially around Colombia and of course Venezuela, which we haven't even tapped onto yet. That's another bigger problem. But these guys are bad actors. They're the ones who are going to kill Trump back when Trump was going to go down to Peru, Lima, for something in America.
That was back in April, wasn't it?
Right, back in April. And we actually got involved with the notification of the president as to why these people wanted to kill him. And, of course, he canceled his trip. That is a fact. That's an absolute fact that when we started broadcasting our radio, he canceled the trip. And Shining Path was definitely going to take him out. This is a real, honest-to-gosh threat to him every single day. So these people do want to take him out. He knows it, and he's doing a fantastic job of leading in spite of all this stuff. That's why I think this whole Acosta thing, they should have put him on the floor in handcuffs the moment he laid hands on that girl.
I didn't get that. I mean, you look at that, and I'm thinking the president should have called for the sergeant of arms, and they bring the Secret Service, and I agree. They arrest him. They take him out in handcuffs and charge him.
Right. Assault and battery. That's really what that was.
Assault and battery and disorderly conduct. Yep. I totally agree 100% with what you're saying. And I don't think the president went far enough today when they took away the credentials of Acosta. What they should do is ban CNN from attending anything at the White House.
I absolutely. And then they come out and support him. I mean, and again, there's been universal condemnation of what he's done. I checked around with some of the other networks just to kind of see what was the flavor. No one's defending Acosta for this, and no one's defending CNN. Yet they come out, you know, you support violence against a woman in the nature. Now, you talk about it as maybe a gentle brush aside. The bottom line was he was acting completely out of line what he was doing as a reporter. You never do stuff like that. And I thought what was going on there, especially with some of the other reporters, I think they'd gotten out in front of it. I think they were trying to get Trump to kind of get angry at him or encourage him. The tone of the questioning that was going on was, it was clear that they had the same plan of attack in terms of questioning and the nature of the questions and the follow-up and the demanding answers. It was very hostile. It was very aggressive. I think it should not be tolerated by the president. And, of course, the president, you know, they claim that he's not available to them. That's a bunch of BS. The guy answers questions all the time. And he's always, you know, he's a media guy. He's going to answer questions. So that statement goes away. But, you know, these guys don't get the opportunity to have that kind of confrontation with them. And they shouldn't have it. They should be more than dignified about asking questions. And they should be professional. What I saw there was rank amateurs. I think they just wanted to create trouble, which they did, but they got it back. I hope Acosta gets charged. I think that young lady should file assault and battery and disorderly conduct, like you say, because it clearly was that. And, you know, where are the women? Listen, he touched a woman. And a school administrator, if that ever happened with an adult to a student, you can bet we would have that adult arrested or there'd be some action right away taken. And especially right in front of an authority, no one would ever. I would, as an administrator, if I saw an adult do that to a girl, I would take him down right now, right here and now. You just don't do what he did. And I know everybody's going to say it was a gentle little. That's a battery, plain and simple. That's a battery, and he should be charged. But that's, you know, that's just me.
I agree. He should be charged, but they need to get tougher in these press conferences, because if I'm attending an Obama press conference in the last regime, I wouldn't even have thought of being rude. I'd have been respectful. Well, I might have been challenging in my question, but my tone would have been respectful.
And, you know, nobody during the Obama – remember how he did it with Obama? Obama staged all these press conferences.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
And he had cards, and he called on people. And if you didn't toe the mark, you were never invited into the press conference again. That was pretty simple, you know, and now Trump's not going to go there with that. He believes in freedom of the press, and he can handle. He's a big boy. He's got big boy pants on. He knows that. And, you know, these guys, I just think the immaturity on their part, except for a few that have been around and are older. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay. I think the immaturity on some of these guys' part is pretty over the top. And I don't think they understand how to conduct themselves, even. I think you can see the age of these guys are fairly young. They're in the mid-30s. And I don't think they know what's appropriate or not appropriate with a president. They're being so disrespectful to him. But, you know, I think that the bigger problem for this media, folks, is just beginning with him. I think that their problems is just beginning with especially after today, even more so with the rest of the public. I think the public's turning them off in droves. Which brings me to the whole thing about Fox News, and we have been blasting Fox News today big time because of their voter suppression that they put out here in California. They called the race for the House of Representatives 90 minutes before the California polls closed. Blatant, in your face, by Chris Steigerwalt and others, voter suppression. Plain and simple, Fox News engaged in it. And we felt that way in California. I have fielded calls. Now, I've been a supporter of Fox News. You know, I love Tucker. I have my favorites and everything. But what I saw last night was blatant, in-your-face voter suppression, clearly designed to hurt Donald Trump in California. We had polls that were wide open. We had massive, heavy voter turnout no one's talking about in California, up and down the state. I went to a poll last night. I was late getting there. I normally vote early in the morning, but I ended up going in the afternoon. The place was packed. I had 20 years of going to the same place. I've never seen the likes of it, and I know that was happening all over California. But they call it, they call the House race for the Dems 90 minutes before we close. Now, I know that that had an impact, especially down in Orange County with Dana Rohrabacher's race, which I don't think it's conceded yet, but it's within a few hundred votes. People stayed away. It was a blatant attempt at voter suppression, and Fox News owes everybody an apology, and there needs to be an investigation of what's going on over there at Fox News. I think that this is a deep state operation. We know that they've got deep state operators there. Chris Steigerwalt is one of the main players in all this. I think what he did was absolutely despicable, if not treasonous, to this country. And he needs to be called out and fired, in my opinion. What he did was despicable. Because, you know, out here on the West Coast, in California, it was big. It was emotional for people. We know that we have a corrupt electoral system. And it was pretty obvious that Fox News and Chris Steigerwalt partnered with Jerry Brown and the deep state actors out here in California, Nancy Pelosi and others, and called that election and threw the election, clearly. You know, this is the thing. They call the election, and then at 8 o'clock, they call the election for Gavin Newsom and Dianne Feinstein. Well, wait a minute. This is the way it works in California. None of the votes had been counted yet. None of them. Now, I understand their prognostications, but then 15 minutes later, they're giving vote counts. That's impossible. Dave, that's impossible. They have to pack up the votes. By the way, most polling places in California, from Southern California to Northern California, because I checked today, were still open at 8 o'clock, and people were heavily voting, and they had lines for votes. Now, what they have to do is take all those ballots in, pack them up, and then take them down to the county to be counted. Well, most places were not getting the ballots together in boxes until well after 10 o'clock last night. They hadn't even counted a vote. Yet they're calling these elections without the votes being counted. That's only one part of the fraud, but that's just the most obvious one. Do you believe that? And Fox News was right in on it. Right in on it. And people are absolutely livid out here at Fox News. I can't, and I'm just expressing it because I'm still, you know, in the Fox News crowd. We've got affiliates at Fox. But I'm just saying that was wrong. And Chris Steigerwalt, you got to remember, he's one of the major never Trumpers who hates Donald Trump with a passion. He was more than happy to get out and do that to influence the race. That's voter fraud. They should be taken. There needs to be an investigation by the Justice Department. How we doing? Are you there? Dave, are you there?
I'm here. I lost you for a minute. Paul, do you have me?
I got you now, yeah.
Yeah, you got to plug in a little bit and get a little louder. There we go.
How's that? Can you hear me now?
A little bit more.
How's that?
Okay, there you go. Yeah, I could hear me breathing back in and my words weren't coming through. We're being screwed with, and this has been happening now. This is the second interview that this has happened on today, and this is no coincidence. I don't have these kind of problems on
Skype.
Yeah, I
wonder what it was. I was talking about Fox News.
Yeah, it really is. And it, to me, what we're looking at here is they're going for the complete suppression of truth. I kind of thought after the midterms, I thought the censorship would slow down a little bit. But I think now it looks like it's going to intensify. What do you think?
Well, it looks like it. I don't think it's going to be successful. I think they're a long ways from success. I think that they're going to do some desperate acts, but it's not going to achieve anything.
Well, I think they may move away from the media, Paul, and I think what they might end up doing is just going straight for the false flag card, and let's just start doing domestic terrorism and blaming Trump and the division he's brought to the country. That's what I think their next move is.
Right, right. Well, they're fairly well versed in it. That they had 8 years of training with Barack Obama for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I call them the Reichstag disciples. I mean, this is what they're going to carry out here, and I think there's no question that this is coming. And you're living where I've said the epicenter is going to be. This is when all hell breaks loose. I think it's going to break loose on the border, but I think it's going to really spread throughout California and then to the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we have to give it some time to cook off, but there is a reason why we understand that there are troops at the California-Arizona border.
Well, Paul, we brought this up before on previous broadcasts that we did together, but back in December of 2017, FEMA and DHS did an exercise where they did a simulated take-in of 400,000 California refugees coming into the Yuma area, mm-hmm. the Yuma, Arizona mm-hmm. area, which borders California and Mexico. So, I listen, they already know it's coming.
Well, you know, we had our source, John Martinez, on the radio. I don't think we've had an interview since then, but he was talking. He's very, very well-versed in everything in South and Central America. He's quite the knowledgeable person. And he was saying that really these caravans are nothing more than the fuse, and the dynamite is Mexico. That these caravans are basically, you know, doing the beta testing to see what these caravan routes might look like, and then the response by the government of the United States. But the real situation is going to develop when there's a collapse, financial, power and water wise, from in Mexico, which is going to cause millions of people to come streaming across the northern border. That's the bomb.
Which was the original purpose for the FEMA camps,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Boy, I'll tell you, it's just we're living in the time right now that we were talking about 10 and 15 years ago about what was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Quayle likes to say this: what's coming is no longer coming; it's already here.
Right. And it is. Well, you know, it's around the corner.
Paul, we're just about out of time, and I'll tell you, this just went entirely too fast. I apologize for the technical issues here, but I think we know this is externally motivated. But tell people very quickly how they can follow your great work.
Well, agenda21radio.news, that's our website address. You can make it shorter by going to a21r.com, and you can check out our website. We got stories that go up every day and all the good stuff that's happening. We try and keep it kind of simple, national world news in California, New California, all things about globalism and Americanism, all those kind of good things. You can catch us on Red State Talk Radio. That's our provider for the most part nationally, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific time. And we have a lot of guests and so on. We're going to have some Trump people on. We've had several Trump people already on the radio show, so that's always very, very entertaining. And we do a lot of talking about all the current issues and all the current things, and we know that we're listened to by quite a few people, a very important people, who don't want to be mentioned right now, but it's kind of interesting, the little dance that we do. But it's very informative, and of course, newcaliforniastate.com, that we're just getting hammered now since the election. We've taken in dozens of phone calls this afternoon, this morning, last night, during the election. Everybody saw the fix was in. It's very obvious, Dave, the fix is in California voting and in electioneering. Very, very obvious. And people are just openly talking about it now, like, yeah, this is what happened. So when you get to that point, yeah, something's going to happen. Something's going to change. So,
yeah,
NewCaliforniaState.com.
Well, Paul, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. And congratulations on all the great work that you guys are doing with New California. And thanks for joining us here on the Common Sense Show.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay, good night.
Good night.